Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
One of the world's most famous and successful clubs is undertaking a perilous financial gambit just to be able to play their new signings. What on earth is going on with Barcelona? What are economic levers? Why is registering players for La Liga so complicated? Adam Crafton is here to explain all of that and much more. I'm Alex Abnos from The Athletic, and this is Soccer Every Day for Wednesday, August 10th. Okay, of all the news to take place over this past European offseason, I think it's fair to say that no single story has had more layers, or more levers, if you prefer, than Barcelona's ongoing financial crisis. It's a story that seems to get a little bit more unprecedented with every passing day, but with La Liga starting in full this weekend, it seems like a good time to try to get some sort of a handle on it. And to that end, I have my colleague Adam Crafton here with me today. Adam, you've been following the Barcelona very closely here at The Athletic, along with a number of our other colleagues, including Paul Balos, Dermot Corrigan, and a few others. You helped write a big investigation into the Barcelona situation that was published last week, which is linked in this episode's description, along with a few other relevant pieces. And Adam, I think I know the answer to this question, but in your career covering football or even just watching or following it before that, have you ever seen anything like what's happening at Barcelona before?
No, and actually I can't think of, even if you just look beyond football into sport, wider society, I can't remember that many instances of, you know, a company appearing to be the most, you know, the most high spending in their industry at a time where they're also probably the company that people are arguably most worried about financially. So it's a real contradiction in terms. We know Barcelona have a huge amount of debt, but then they're also spending a huge amount on incomings at the same time. So I think from the outside, those who maybe haven't been following it as closely are just looking at it a little bit in the way that Bayern Munich's head coach Julian Nagelsmann said, which was something along the lines of, you know, Barcelona are the only club that appear to have no money and sign every player that they want.
It was weird even just writing that intro, because I called it a Barcelona financial crisis. And I was like, can you call it a crisis if you're still able to buy Robert Lewandowski and Rafinha and all these other players? So I think it's important that we set up some context here for anybody that's just coming to the story or has tried to approach a story and is just confounded by the layers here. Let's go back in time a little bit to the start of 2021. Joan Laporta sort of arrives as Barcelona's president. He was formerly Barcelona's president, I would say, what, earlier in the 2000s. What does he find as he gets into the president's chair? What sort of state is Barcelona in at the start of 2021?
Yeah, I suppose to strip it right back, you know, we probably have to make clear Barcelona Football Club is a fan member owned model. So whereas you may have some clubs, you know, for example, Manchester City owned by a fund linked to a nation state, or Newcastle owned by a fund linked to a nation state. And then you have clubs like Manchester United, owned by the Glazer family, who you guys in the States will know from other sports, or the Cronker Sports and Entertainment. So there's these different ownership models, and Barcelona are a fan-owned model, which in theory should be very democratic, because it means every few years the members, what they call socios, are allowed to vote for the president that they would like to lead their club. And it's an honorary position. It's not a paid position. And what happened was that the previous president, Josep Maria Bartomeu, had left, it's fair to say, under a cloud. There'd been all sorts of controversies and investigations and scandals. And eventually he resigned. He was forced out, as well as resigning, it's probably fair to say. And the new president, Joan Laporta, he came in and, he found a really a huge mess financially. The club were something like 1.35 billion in debt. And obviously it will always serve a new president to add a little bit of hyperbole to how bad the inheritance is, right? As in, I'm sure, I don't want to get into Biden Trump, but I'm sure when Biden came in, there's an element of like, look what the last guy left me, give me this next few years. I'm going to do my best to sort it out, but we're going to keep on blaming whatever came before. That's the way that democracy works sometimes, isn't it? So I think there was a little bit of exaggeration, but the bare facts were that Barcelona's financial situation was disastrous, right? They'd, even though I think by 2019, they were projecting 1 billion in revenues, they were spending something like 70, 80% of that on player salaries, right? I mean, these percentages were just off the scale. I think that what they were spending on wages in 2019, the most in Europe, was 33% higher than the second place, which was Manchester United. Lionel Messi's contract was leaked, and I think that was around $675 million worth of contract between 2017 and 2021, if you take into account every clause and condition. So that gives an idea of what the inheritance was.
Sort of the main character of a lot of Barcelona's financial issues this summer, at least, has been Frankie de Jong. How does he fit into all these sort of issues that you're talking about, Adam?
Well, Frankie de Jong was, I suppose if you look at Barcelona's squad, they did an analysis of their squad and they looked at who do we have that might be one of those sources of income if we're at a point where the economic levers that we're trying to pull aren't quite enough. And because Barcelona have quite a lot of options in central midfield, they have Sergio Busquets. They also have young players like Pedri and Gavi who have been through or either recruited very young or come through the Barcelona Academy. And as such, Frankie de Jong has been seen as one of those players they can get a lot of money for. And they have big interest from Manchester United, who, several weeks ago now agreed a deal worth £85 million to sign Frankie de Jong. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea are also interested, but they've not yet made an offer. The problem at the moment is Barcelona, in the midst of the COVID crisis, negotiated a new deal with Frankie de Jong, in which they reduced his salary temporarily. I think he got something like 2.9 million and then 6 million in different seasons. But it means that he's now owed something like £17 million in deferred wages. And that is a major sticking point. If he's going to leave the club, him and his agents are arguing, you owe this to us and we're not going to leave before you give us that money. And the other part of it is he's really not very unhappy at Barcelona, right? He's a really talented player. He enjoys living in Barcelona. I think he's just got engaged. His fiance likes living in Barcelona and he's got a contract and he's saying, I want to stay. And I'm not that mad to go to Manchester United where, the world is falling in on a weekly basis and they're not in the Champions League. I think Chelsea would probably be his preference at this point. It's an ongoing situation.
So you mentioned player wages as being sort of a really significant driver of Barcelona's financial problems. I would imagine the COVID-19 and the various, sort of loss of match day revenue also played a role there. But it's really the spending that's getting them in trouble. And I think it also plays a role in the process of registering players for La Liga, which is another one of these terms that we've seen thrown around, especially in the last few weeks. Barcelona have signed all these players, but they haven't registered them, thus they can't play. We first hear about this in 2021 with the signings that they made that offseason. What is the deal with registering players for La Liga? Why is this a thing that we're hearing so much about? What is necessary to actually get players registered in order to play in the league?
Yeah, so this goes back around 10 years or so to when La Liga brought in what they call economic controls. And The idea here is a kind of a form of financial fair play, which we also have UEFA, which is the European sports governing body that they impose for clubs who are competing in the Champions League. But this was a domestic Spanish league driven initiative. And the basic principle was a lot of Spanish clubs were debt laden. Some of them were on the brink of going out of business. They were really poorly run. And it was kind of the, you know, either the clubs going to the league or the league saying to the clubs, like, we actually can't really trust you to run yourselves financially and maintain yourselves, you know, as community assets, right? We want there still to be all these clubs there for supporters. Now, the basic principle of La Liga's economic controls is that, you know, you shouldn't be spending that much more than you're bringing in, right? Like, it's not that different to most, you know, most business concepts. You know, we want you to be bringing in really as much as you're taking out. Now, it's kind of like the operational costs and debt repayments being being subtracted away from your revenues, right? So it makes a lot of sense,
right?
But the actual algorithm itself to be able to register players is super complicated. Yeah. I'm not even going to, it would take us 30, 45, 50 minutes to go through all the different layers that are associated with it.
But, and all the different things that you can adjust in there and creatively account for.
Exactly. But as I said, the basic principle is you have the revenues and then you're minusing off operational costs each year and also debt repayments. Barcelona have a huge issue with both of those because they have debts. You know, I said it was 1.35 billion last summer. They've also now gone into a 1.5 billion loan from Goldman Sachs for a big stadium renovation project. There was another 550 million euros worth of credit when they were restructuring debt. I mean, depending who you speak to, this debt can be anything between 1.5 to 3 billion. So in terms of debt repayments, Barcelona have a big issue. In terms of salaries, as I explained, they've also got a huge issue. So that makes it really difficult at times for them to register new signings unless they take certain steps. Now, one of those steps has been to reduce player salaries where possible. So that's why Lionel Messi left the club last summer.
Sure.
It's another reason why they've been getting rid of players like Philippe Coutinho and Antoine Griezmann beyond, you know, you can talk about underperformance as well, but they were also hugely well remunerated players and they needed to reduce that from the wage bill. We've also seen certain players reduce their wages in many cases repeatedly. You know, someone like Samuel Umtiti, a French central defender, I mean, he has either deferred or reduced his wages now four times over the during probably since the start of COVID to help Barcelona's financial situation. And this is a guy who barely plays as well. And then you've got Gerard Piqué, who is one of their main central defenders, and he reduced his salary last summer so that they could register their new player, Memphis Depay, a Dutch striker. Right. And now again this summer, Gerard Piqué is again being asked to reduce his wages, and I think he's going to agree to do that. So you have the first step, reducing player salaries and basically getting rid of certain players like Messi to reduce that burden. You've then got the debt repayments. They're not going anywhere. They have to continue paying those debts. The next stage is, how do Barcelona continue to be competitive as, you know, one of the most recognizable sports teams in the world, while at the same time having to make these huge debt repayments? And that leaves them with two options, really. This is what they argue. They say one option is, we cut our costs. We spend years in the wilderness, and therefore we start becoming quite irrelevant compared to what people know of us as FC Barcelona.
Sure.
And the other option is, we need to invest in order to grow. And if we invest in this sports team by spending on players, by borrowing money, by selling off assets in order to get short-term cash injections, then it will be this virtuous business model whereby things will improve on the pitch, the commercial revenue will grow even further, the brand becomes even stronger, and then all of these things will fall into place. I'm not saying that's what I necessarily think is a great idea, but that appears to be the argument. Invest to grow. It's a bit like, I don't know, if a socialist party came to power and said, rather than having a period of austerity in terms of public spending, we're going to invest into society and everything will grow as a result. Let's see.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, so by the end of the 21-22 season, Messi is obviously gone. They still have a ton of huge wages on their books, Barcelona does. They finished second in La Liga. They're out in the round of 16 in the Copa del Rey. They're out in the group stage of the Champions League and out in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. Just not a very good season by their standards at all. And around now is, at least for me, where we start hearing a lot about economic levers. Are these basically ways for Barcelona to make up that gap that you were talking about earlier, in order to get a little bit more revenue so they can then invest a little bit more into this sporting project?
I mean, it's the only way they can do it. You know, they can't just, you can't just endlessly, despite what it might seem like, you can't just continue borrowing. So it's some, and you can't just sell off all your players if you want to remain competitive.
Right.
I think actually last season they maybe looked at going down that route. They promoted quite a lot of players from the B team and academy, but they finished second or third in the end. They didn't really have an impact on the Champions League. They went out in the group stage. And I think it led to a kind of collective breakdown, really, in the sense of we can't, you know, Real Madrid, their great rivals, won the Champions League. We can't just be irrelevant. We have to exist and compete. Now, these levers are fascinating because, you know, the key elements of it is an agreement with a US global investment firm called Sixth Street. And the idea here is to sell off a percentage of their broadcasting television rights for the next 25 years. And they've now sold 25% of that. And I think they've brought in something like 600 million euros as a result of that.
I was going to say, like, TV money is talked all the time about the, like, sort of the major money revenue stream for clubs, especially like Barcelona. So the fact that they're selling off that seems incredibly significant.
They're selling off a quarter of that. And to give, you know, listeners some context into what that means in a real sense, it's Barcelona at the moment gets something around between 160 and 170 million euros each year. And the euro at the moment is very close to the dollar. So, you know, it's a couple of million in it. And really the idea, so they get around 160, 170 million euros, and 25% of that now they will not receive. That will go to Sixth Street. And that will happen for the next 25 years. So that's a big sum of money next, you know, if it's the same sort of figure next year, then that'll be, you know, 40 million, right? That should be going to the club, but is instead going to Sixth Street. But in return for that, Barcelona have had a load of money front loaded into their bank account, which enables them to invest in the squad this summer, to pay salaries that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do, and also they hope to be able to register them with La Liga. So those were two of the levers. The first one, I think, was 10%. The second was 15%, which brings you to 25%. The third lever is something called Barca Studios, which is kind of Barca's in-house audiovisual content, which was founded a couple of years ago, that kind of does a load of digital stuff. It's moving into NFTs, metaverse, all that stuff, which maybe a lot of us hear about, we don't fully understand, but everyone who's involved in tech tells us it's going to make a shitload of money at some point. So it's still possible that there'll be another stake of that asset, which is sold to help them register players ahead of the new season. Because as we'll come on to, there is now some disagreement between La Liga and Barca over whether these levers are enough in order to be able to register players.
Well, so this exactly leads me into my next question. You've now mentioned three levers, potentially a fourth. how many levers are there? Like, at what point is Barcelona just selling basically the entire club for parts to various people? Like, is it possible? What's the future here? Like, is it possible that Barcelona, this club that everybody knows and many people love, is eventually just owned by a collection of people and businesses and conglomerates and things like that?
Well, if it carries on this way, then yeah. Right? I mean, like,
yeah.
If you continue to sell assets in the way that they are, I mean, what they would argue is they're not selling the club. You know, they're not selling a percentage of the club here. You know, it's still a fan member owned model. What they're saying is we're selling a percentage of our incoming revenue.
Sure.
And a percentage of businesses that are associated with the club, but I suppose separate businesses.
So let's be, at the time that we're recording this, basically none of their new signings have officially been registered to play in La Liga. And also at the time we're recording this, the La Liga season starts in a matter of days. But let's just assume, because it would be really crazy if they don't end up getting these players registered. Let's assume they get these players registered. Let's assume that Barcelona goes on to win La Liga and the Champions League this season, and they get all the revenue and attention and money that comes with that. Adam, does that fix any of this? Like, because that would basically prove Barcelona's whole hypothesis. If all these investments were to pay off, they would argue that the plan is working perfectly. But is there like a danger here still?
I think, I mean, my interpretation is there's a really big danger because, you know, okay, they've got this cash injection. We're not sure how much of it is being used on debt repayments. So is it, you know, is a lot of it just being plowed into squad built team building? I'm sure some of it will be used to, you know, to pay off some debts. But I suppose the risk here is in what we discussed at the very start, where you have this democratic model of ownership, which on the one hand is a really good thing. You know, if you have a, you know, like the last president who was really unpopular and they wanted him out and he was eventually forced to resign, that's quite a good thing. The flip side is you always have someone in there who's trying to get another term. So he's making big promises and has to win during his presidency. It means there's a lot of very short-term thinking because no one wants to be the president that sort of just lets Barcelona drift. They want to be the president that wins La Liga, that gets to a Champions League final, that signs famous players and makes big promises. So I think that there is a lot of risk. I think the risk will be transferred to maybe not even the next president, but the president that comes after that. Because who knows where Barcelona will be in 10, 15 years and what that percentage of that 25% of TV revenue will mean for the club at that point. I wouldn't necessarily call this a lever, but the other ongoing issue is Barcelona are still one of three clubs committed to a European Super League. And they are currently engaged with a legal battle with UEFA in the European courts. And I think there is still this hope that a European Super League, which will come along, which will mean a huge spike in revenue and a huge amount of investment that would go into the club. For what it's worth, I think that's miles off, but it's still something that's being spoken about by people that are in power and matter at Barcelona. So yeah, huge risk. You know, how much difference does it really make to a brand the size of Barcelona, whether they finish first or second in La Liga, in terms of what they can do from a revenue point of view? Okay, you get a bit more from the league for winning. Maybe you get a few bonuses from your kit sponsors, but does it change the world? Probably not. And then even from the Champions League point of view, okay, you might win the Champions League. That's a big deal. And you'll get, you know, an extra 50 million or so from UEFA for doing so. But again, like, it doesn't fundamentally change what's already a hugely successful brand. So I think it is laced with a lot of risk. And the final thing I would say is they put a lot of risk here into Xavi, a legend of a footballer for Barcelona. Quite an inexperienced coach, really. He's coached in Qatar for a couple of years and has had sort of a season at Barcelona so far. He's been okay. I think the players like him, but he's not Pep Guardiola. And they put a huge amount of trust in him and also these new signings. You know, Lewandowski, I think 3 or 4 year contract he's been given, and he's 34 next month. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, for him to be the headline signing, it's not like they're signing Cristiano Ronaldo, age 24, and he's got 10 years ahead of him where he's going to score 40 goals every season. So a lot of risk involved, but it's the story that everyone is talking about in European football at the moment.
And I'm sure they will continue to talk about it. And as things develop, we might have to have you back to explain whatever the sixth or seventh or eighth lever happens to be. Until then, Adam Crafton, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It's a pleasure.
As mentioned at the top of the show, Adam's investigation into Barcelona, how we got here, is linked in the show's description, along with some updates on what the fourth economic lever might possibly be and why registering players in La Liga is so complicated. Before we go, your TV guide for today, all times are Eastern. We have two kind of interesting games over in Europe today at 2:45 p.m. in the League Cup, Sheffield Wednesday taking on Sunderland. That is on ESPN Plus or DAZN in Canada. And at 3 p.m., the European Super Cup, that is the winner of the Europa League and the winner of the Champions League from last season, facing off against each other for a trophy that means... it's debatable how much it means, but it should be an interesting game. Real Madrid versus Eintracht Frankfurt, that is going to be on CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus in the United States and DAZN in Canada. Later on tonight, we have some interesting games. First, in the NWSL at 7:30 p.m., Washington Spirit versus Portland Thorns. These are two teams heading in opposite directions. Washington Spirit struggling to win at all. Portland Thorns currently on top of NWSL. That will be on Paramount Plus or Twitch if you're pretty much anywhere else in the world. Also, in Copa Libertadores, we have the second leg of some quarterfinals tonight. Talleres Córdoba versus Vélez Sarsfield. That is going to be on BN Sports. Vélez is up 3-2 in that one. Kind of an exciting tie. And then also at 8:30 p.m., Palmeiras versus Atlético Mineiro. Everything to play for there. It's 2-2 on aggregate. Again, both of those games are on BN Sports. And last but certainly not least, at 8:30 p.m., the MLS All-Star Game, which features the MLS All-Star Team versus the Liga MX All-Stars. That is going to be on ESPN, TUDN, if you prefer to watch in Spanish in the United States, also on TSN and TVA in Canada. This show is produced by Mike Zimmerman with help from John Hayes. You can get ad-free versions of the show by subscribing to The Athletic. Thank you so much for listening, and happy soccer to you all.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.